This is Crash the Net with Dave Rothenberg.
And a good Saturday morning to you and yours as we get rolling here with Crash the Net on 98.7 ESPN. We're going to have everything that you're looking for with the local hockey teams. We'll look at the week that was for the Islanders, Rangers, and Devils. We'll look ahead to the week that is going to be for the three locals as well. Over the summer, I had the opportunity to sit down with the Islanders head coach, Barry Trotz, in a pretty personal, honest kind of back and forth. So we'll take a listen to that. Islanders head coach Barry Trotz, we'll take a listen to that in about, 10, 12 minutes, and we'll take a good listen to that conversation. There's giveaways, so everything you are looking for to start your Saturday morning off right, early April, you're going to have. Now, before we even get rolling, get into the Rangers, Islanders, Devils, giveaway time. Let's go. Listen to this. You'll be very excited by it. We have two autographed Islanders pucks to give away. It's very easy to enter. Let's have you text. Pick up your phone, send a text, and how should we do it? How about this? CTN. Text CTN to 44202, and we will draw the winners at random. Again, it's CTN to 44202. We'll select two winners randomly, send them the signed pucks, all from your home for the hookup. Your good friends right here on 98.7 ESPN. So Barry Trotz, who I had the chance to talk to over the summer, we will play some of that interview in about 10 minutes from right now on Crash the Net on a Saturday morning. All right, how did it look for the locals this week? Well, it's a good question, and here's the recap. Rangers played last Saturday in Philadelphia. Rangers had played really well heading into that game. Remember, they beat up on Philadelphia earlier in the week. But last Saturday was a little bit different. It was down in the city of brotherly love again, but the Rangers got out to a 1-0 lead. Mika Zibanejad got the scoring started with his 11th in the first period, and Rangers had a 1-0 lead. But it was tied at 1 in the second by the Flyers, and then you start to think to yourself as we're making our way through into the third period, well, the Rangers are going to get at least a point out of this one. It didn't work out like that because at 15:33, of the third period, Samuel Morin scores to make it 2-1 Flyers, and that, in fact, is your final. So the Rangers lose it 2-1. And then they didn't have a lot of time to lick their wounds, as last Sunday, Rangers traveled to Washington, and that game got ugly, and it got ugly early. In the second period, after a scoreless first, Tom Wilson lights the lamp for the Capitals, making it 1-0. Ovechkin, soon after that, makes it 2-0, his 18th of the season. Wilson's 9th of the season. Second of the game makes it 3-0, and then it's 4-0 Capitals into the third period as Kuznetsov tallies his 6th of the year. So you start to think to yourself, all right, this game is over, and I wonder how much the key components even get to play the remainder of the game. Well, the Rangers did fight back in this one because in the third period, down 4-0, Colin Blackwell lit the lamp not once but twice, his 7th and 8th of the season, cutting the deficit in half to 4-2. But then TJ Oshie scored his 8th of the year, making it 5-2. The Rangers were not done there, though. They did have a lot of fight, very resilient. Lafreniere with his 5th of the season, making it 5-3. And at 16:08 of the third period, Chris Kreider with his 17th of the year, made it 5-4. Rangers got all the way back, but couldn't get over the hump. And that was your final score, 5-4. Then on Tuesday of this past week, the Rangers had lost these first two of the week, obviously in Philadelphia and in Washington, and Washington paid a visit to the Garden. Rangers were kind of hemorrhaging, needed a win, looked awful early. Oshie scored, Dowd scored, Rangers down 2-0, and you felt like things were starting to slip on the season. But at 15:36 of the first period, Philip Hedel scored his 6th of the year, cutting the deficit to 2-1. No scoring in the second, and in the third, still down 2-1, Kaapo Kakko scores his 5th of the year, ties it at 2, and all of a sudden there's kind of a renewed belief that the Rangers can win this one. A couple minutes later, Adam Fox scores to make it 3-2. At 15:41, Panarin makes it 4-2. Later on in the period, Buchnevich makes it 5-2, his 14th of the season, and the Rangers, I don't want to say save the season, but really with a big win, and the final is 5-2. Now, don't want it to be lost in this one. Igor Shesterkin was absolutely sensational. Stopped 30 of 32 shots from the Capitals, and the Rangers get at the Dodge with a 5-2 win. Then you figure maybe it gets a little bit easier because Thursday of this week, the Rangers traveled to Buffalo. Was anything but easy. Fell behind 1-0 in the first period. Did tie it at 1 in the second on a goal by Blackwell. So we're 1-1 into the third we go. And the Rangers get what seemingly is going to be your game-winning goal into the third. Hedel scores, makes it 2-1, his seventh of the season. And that goal holds all the way until 3 seconds left. And that's when the Sabres tied it at 2 at 19:56.4, I guess it was, of the third period. And you start to think to yourself, you cannot afford to get a point out of this one where it should have been 2. But in the overtime, a guy that's been red hot of late continued that streak.
Met by Zibanejad. Fox flips the puck ahead for Panarin. 2-on-1 for the Rangers. Here's Zibanejad across to Panarin to the right circle. Back to Zibanejad. He scores! An overtime winner for Mika Zibanejad. Rangers defeat the Sabres 3-2.
That, of course, Kenny Albert, as heard right here on 98.7 ESPN, your home for the New York Rangers. So the Rangers, Panarin to Zibanejad, 3-2 is your final. And the head coach, who is back behind the bench for the Rangers, David Quinn, very pleased with the overtime victory.
It's a kick in the ass when you give up a goal with 3 seconds to go and play the way we did for the second and third period. But I thought we were able to kind of pull ourselves together. And, you know, we got 2 points. And really, at the end of the day, that's what this is all about. I mean, we're playing in the National Hockey League and we want to win hockey games. And, you know, we found a way to get 2 points tonight. This team's been playing well. They've been playing hard. They took 3 out of 4 points from Philly. Watched their games against Boston. They could have easily won those games against Boston. I know what their record is, but, you know, you still got guys that are National Hockey League players and they make it hard for you. And I really was impressed with how we played in the second and third. I still think we turned down way too many shots, even though we had 47 of them. I thought it could have been a lot more. We still got to create more of a shooting mentality. But listen, we found a way to win and get 2 points, which is really, at the end of the day, you know, when you're this deep in the season, that all that matters.
And he is correct on that one. Rangers get out of Dodge with 2 points in that game. Now, Hedel scored what looked to be the game winner, put the Rangers up 2-1, and it lasted all the way until, like I mentioned, 19:56 of the third period. He was asked after this one, where's your confidence level right now?
My confidence is great. Just, you can see today, almost every shift we spent in offensive zone. We had so many shots, a lot of great chances, and we scored a goal that was deserved for us. So when I get on the ice, I want to play my game, be confident and play on the puck. And I have a good line mate, so it's good for us, and we have good chemistry, and I feel very good.
So now the Rangers have won 2 in a row heading into the weekend, and we'll look at the weekend schedule a little bit later on during this episode of Crash the Net. The Islanders, kind of an up-and-down week last Saturday in Pittsburgh, and that really might have been the Islanders' worst game of the entire season. They were down 2-0 in the first period at the end of one. Then in the second period, Sidney Crosby scores. Brian Rust scores a couple goals. Barzell did cut it to 5-1. Bevilier made it 5-2. Eberle 5-3. But Rust with the hat trick making it 6-3 in Pittsburgh last Saturday. And that was your final. Now, on Monday, Islanders played Pittsburgh again in Pittsburgh and fell behind again in the first period. And again, it was 2-0 at the end of one. Now, the Islanders did fight and scrap in that one. Matty Martin scores his 6th of the year in the second to make it 2-1. But they just couldn't get the offense going. And that was your final score, 2-1 at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins. All that being said, the offense got going on Thursday of this week. Islanders actually fell behind at the Coliseum against Washington. 1-0 as John Carlson lights the lamp for the Capitals. And then the proverbial floodgates opened up. Eberle with a goal. Barzell with a goal. Nelson with a goal. Barzell with another one. 4 goals in the first period. Islanders had a 4-2 lead at the end of the first. In the second, Cizikas scores. Eberle scores again. Islanders had 6-2. And then Bailey and Barzell finish off the scoring. Islanders win it by the final of 8-4 Thursday night at the Coliseum against the Washington Capitals. Matt Barzell, who was sensational with a hat trick, had 5 points in this contest. And the Islanders with a huge win over the Washington Capitals. The head coach of the Islanders, Barry Trotz, after the game was asked, what's it like playing a wide open end-to-end game like this?
These games are fun because you've got two good teams, two intense teams, and ideally you feel like you got control. But this team that we played tonight, obviously Washington, they've got some special players there, obviously Ovechkin and Backstrom and Kuznetsov and Oshie and Carlson on the back end, and yeah, Verona's dangerous. They just got lots of weapons, so you know you're going to give up some stuff. You just got to limit it as much as you can. And, you know, we were fortunate we were able to score a few goals tonight.
Now, we know the MO for the Islanders is to shut you down offensively. Their defense is so good, and that's really their modus operandi. But Barry Trotz was asked after the game, is a win like this, an 8-4 victory, as satisfying as shutting a team out?
There's only one stat that really matters to a coach at the end of the day. Did you win or lose? And every game's a little different. You know, I get as much joy out of a 8-4 victory against a real good team than I do a 1-0 shutout against a real good team. But it's a win. To me, it's about how we win. We won tonight as a team. You got some contributions up and down the lineup. You got timely saves, and we were disciplined. So all that being said, any win, especially against a good opponent, when everybody's pulling on the rope, you're going to be satisfied. And you'll nitpick about this and that, but at the end of the day, you're satisfied with the win.
That's the theme, right, that we've heard so far this morning from both coaches, David Quinn and Barry Trotz, since I don't care if we're in 9-8, 1-0, a win is a win is a win. Now, we mentioned it, the game on Thursday night, Matty Barzal with the hat trick, his 13th of the season, has 5 points as well. So Barry Trotz was asked after the game to discuss the huge night from Barzal.
What I liked about his play tonight, and he got rewarded for it, is he played the right way. I mean, he moved the puck, got it back. He got open. He went to the hard areas. He drove the net. He got to the slot. You know, he didn't try to do it by himself. He trusted his teammates, and he was skating. He had lots of juice tonight. You know, he got on the score sheet, and he continued to be dangerous all night. He was hard to contain, I'm sure, for them. And when he's using his teammates and moving the puck like he was and getting it back and making things happen, he's going to get rewarded. So as much as all the points, one of the real key plays, I thought he came back on a play in the third period and really wiped out when it was 6-4, he wiped out a real dangerous play in the crease because of good positioning. So I, as much as he's got the 5 points, I'm just as proud of his two-way game, which is when he plays that full two-way game like he did tonight, he's going to be rewarded, and he was.
And he is just a sensational player and a young player the Islanders will build around for years. Now, the Devils, and really they're not about the wins and losses right now. They've decided, and this week really, to get younger, to go with the younger guys. They've moved on from Nikita Gusev. They placed him on waivers and decided to call Tyce Thompson up to the big club. He's a Long Island prospect, fourth round pick in 2019, hailing from Oyster Bay. Thompson was asked, how does it feel to be practicing with the big club?
It's definitely surreal. I mean, you said it. It's every kid's dream to make it here and to know that I'm pretty close now. And just seeing all the guys, like Hughes, PK, Palmieri, all these guys that you look up to, watching them play every night. So it's definitely surreal.
You can almost hear the wide-eyed, feeling of Tyce Thompson as he gets ready for the start of his NHL career. And Lindy Ruff, who's been through a lot of these battles before, what are your impressions of the young Thompson?
You know, I saw some excitement out of him. He moves well out there. You know, didn't get to see a lot of him, but you know, I think we can see that skates well, and he'll get a feel for how we play, and I'm pretty sure we'll get him even more involved in practice than he was today.
So you're going to see a much more of the youth movement down the stretch here for the Devils, it appears. All right, so that's where we are with the three locals from this past week. Later on the show, we'll look to what they have coming up this coming week. But in just a moment, I had a sit-down with Barry Trotz over the summer, touched on a lot of different topics. He's a really interesting, engaging, entertaining guy. If you don't know much about him, even if you do, you want to pay attention to this interview I had with Barry Trotz. That's next on a Saturday morning. It's Crash the Net with Dave Rothenberg right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Crash the Net podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to Crash the Net with Dave Rothenberg on 98.7 ESPN.
So this is the fifth episode we've had of the show. And we put some really entertaining product, I think, on the air. Donnie LaGreca has joined us a couple times. Of course, the infamous, wonderful hockey analyst and co-host of the Michael Kay Show. Dan Rosen. We had Barry Beck from way over on the other side of the world. John Tinelli. But I'm excited about this next conversation. I had it over the summer with Islanders head coach Barry Trotz. We literally sat down for an afternoon in what might have been the hottest office I've ever sat with. And we were very, very socially distanced on other sides of the room. And we just got to talking. My first question to the head coach of the Islanders, Barry Trotz, when did you realize that hockey, when you were a young kid, was going to be a part of your life?
Well, I think I always wanted to be in hockey. I was a pretty good junior player coming up. Went to Notre Dame College. I actually made my junior team in my hometown at 15 years old. My dad thought it was a good idea. It wasn't a great idea if I hang around a bunch of 20-year-olds, so I made my way out to Notre Dame and played midget hockey there and sort of came through the ranks. And then I got an opportunity to go to the Washington Capitals as a 19-year-old as a tryout. And funny as it may be, I look back at it, you know, 30-some years later, it was in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I saw Jack Button, who was director of players and personnel, and it was David Poile's first year with the Washington Capitals back then. And I worked my way up the stairs, and I said to Mr. Button, just want to introduce myself, Barry Trotz. I just want to let you know, I'm going to make it real hard for you to send me back home, but I thank you for... And he goes, listen, I know who the hell you are, number one. I invited you. And the only reason that you're here is that you might be a good minor league leader or coach someday. As a 19-year-old, I didn't know if I wanted to hear that. But looking back on it, it was great advice by him.
All right, so it's transitioning from that. At what point did you realize coaching is my avenue to make a career out of it?
Well, I think it sort of just came naturally. Yeah, I was at the University of Manitoba. I transitioned from, you know, my junior days to the University of Manitoba. And I played a year, became one of the leaders on the hockey club, and got injured, hurt my back, and I tried to play the next year, couldn't really play. And Wayne Fleming was the coach at the time, and he asked me to come on the ice and help him out, because back then the Canadian universities don't have the funds that the U.S. colleges did, but it was really good hockey. And I started, you know, being part of the coaching staff. For the first year, I was... for the most part, pushing pucks and listening probably more and that. And then he started handing me these Roger Nielsen clinics and these, you know, these different things to read. And I sort of naturally started to transition into that coaching aspect because the body wasn't responding anymore. So that's Wayne Fleming was really one of the people that became one of my mentors to get into coaching.
And then as far as a head coach that people can say, oh, you know, put their finger on that guy, is Roger Nielsen a guy that you looked up to? Who's kind of your role model coach?
My role model, you know, as a coach growing up, I had through my junior years, Brian Murray was my first junior coach. In midget hockey, I had Terry O'Malley and Barry McKenzie, both played on the Canadian Olympic team years and years ago, but were really fundamentally strong teachers. And then when I went to the Regina Pats, Brian Murray was my coach. I've taken something from every coach. I had Jack Sangster and Bill LaForge were all people I was involved with. And then Wayne Fleming, I think, really pushed me into that coaching sort of area, where that road where I knew that was, if I want to stay in the game, that was something that I could stay in the game and maybe have some success at. So and I tried to take some pieces of them from all those different experiences.
So from all the guys that you picked something up positively, when you were studying or learning or seeing what they were capable of doing, did you look at the negatives as well and say, you know what, I don't like this. This will not be me. I'm not a fan of that, and I'm going to make sure to not do that, along with the positives that you picked up?
Yeah. I think as a player, you look and you go, there's stuff that you don't like when you're a player. Some of it is partially because you just didn't like the way it was handled, or it was something that you felt like the coach was pushing you into another area. And I tried to look at it on both sides. And I think any decisions that I make, I try to look at both sides. There's some that are really easy. If they fall into the do what's right category, I try to go down that road all the time because of the fact that I think if you do what's right, you're not going to get yourself into broken promises, those type of things.
You think your players now would consider you to be a player's coach?
I think so. I think I've always been a bit of a player's coach more, but I do know the line. I think the players do recognize that, you know, when you cross the line the wrong way, I'm going to come down on you a little bit. But I think I would be considered a player's coach. I think the players now are, they want to know why and what. And, when I was growing up, whatever the coach said, that's what you did. And there was no
question.
There was no rebuttal. There was no questions. And so I think I learned that I'm just going to be myself. My job is twofold. For the organization is to win hockey games or win championships. That's that's my relationship with the organization. With the player, I have to be in a situation where I can help build their brand, but it still has to fit into what we do. And I'm in a relationship and a partnership, if you will, to make players better and to win hockey games for the organization and try to make them not only better players, but better people.
All right, so walk us through your first ever coaching job at the professional ranks.
First job professionally. I was actually a pro scout. I was a pro scout. I was a head Western scout for the Washington Capitals. And there was a change at the top with Brian Murray was let go by the Washington Capitals, and his brother Terry was in Baltimore and was taking over the Capitals. And the farm team was in Newmarket, Ontario. And I lived in Vancouver at that time. And I got a call from Jack Button about 9 o'clock at night. And he said, we're making a change. I need you to do something for me. And I said, what's that? And he says, I need you to coach the Baltimore Skipjacks tomorrow in Newmarket, which is just not too far from Toronto. So I took a red-eye flight, got in at 8 in the morning, had breakfast, had a morning skate with the team and coached that night. So that would be my first actual, and I went back to scouting after 2 weeks. I think Doug McLean came in and took over the team from that point. But my first true job was I was assistant coach in Baltimore after I was a head Western scout for a number of years, and there was a change. With the head coach, Robbie Laird at the time, and I learned a lot from Robbie, and really didn't think it was warranted. We weren't doing great, but I didn't think it was warranted. And they made a change, so I took over the last five games, and I thought that was probably the end of my coaching career. And lo and behold, I think Tom Ebright was the head coach or the owner of the Skipjacks at the time. I think he had a little say with David Poile. I think David was looking to make a clean change there. And I met with David, and I came home, and I thought I was done my coaching career. I was heading back to Canada with a wife and two kids. And I met David on Monday. I met him on Friday initially. And then he says, I talked to Mr. Ebright, and we're going to give you one more year to see what you can do. And then the rest has been sort of history, if you will.
So if current Barry Trotz looked back at younger Barry Trotz, who was just getting his feet wet in coaching, you think you'd look and say, I was a good head coach back then?
No, I would say I was a bad head coach. I've had those discussions in my head a few times. You know, the things that I thought that when you're younger, I think, and this is just maybe society, most young people, you think that you know everything, and you find out later in life that you really didn't know as much as you thought. Back then, 30 some years ago, hockey was different. The culture was different, all that stuff. So I wish I would tell them to slow down. Don't worry about trying to control everything and everybody. The one thing I think that experience has allowed me, and I look back, when you're a young person, you're worried about 100 things and everybody. And I think what experience tells you is that find what those 5 or 6 really important things are and get those in line. And then everything else sort of comes into a line. And you won't worry yourself sick on sort of non-essential things that you need in your, you know, that you think are important are really not that important. So I would probably have that little speech and say, slow it down a little bit.
So that's the first half of the conversation that I had with Barry Trotz. We'll take a listen to the second half of the conversation, and you don't want to go anywhere because it is as enthralling as the first half, in fact, was. Gets really, really good. Go nowhere. It's Saturday morning. It's Rothenberg with you. It's Crash the Net right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Crash the Net podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You are listening to Crash the Net with Dave Rothenberg on 98.7 ESPN.
So when we left you off, it's like a special Brady Bunch or Blossom or a show that leaves you with a cliffhanger. We were talking with Barry Trotz and head coach of the Islanders, and we're about to get into his NHL career now. So here's the question. We'll pick it right up here. How did you land the job with the Nashville Predators?
Well, it was, I had good success. The Baltimore team that I took over for that 1 year, we had a really young team. I think we had 17 rookies on the squad. We got in the playoffs, and we pushed a real good Binghamton team. They had set all kinds of league records to a seventh game. And they were impressed with the development of our young guys, what we did. And then the team transitioned from Baltimore to Portland. And they thought I did a good enough job. I was going up to Portland, met with Jack Button at the time and our ownership, and they were making a transition in hockey where not every team had 20 prospects. They had about a dozen, and then you sort of fill in the blanks. And with the Portland ownership, which is Tommy Bright, who moved the team up there, and David Poile and Jack Button, felt that it was really important to identify a really good veteran player. So I became the head coach of the Portland Pirates, but also I was in charge of filling in the roster. So I knew our prospects, and I built our team around the prospects. If we had a top-notch young centerman, I was going to get him two wings that really could help him out. Good people, but good players as well to help his development as well. And we built a team in Portland that had a lot of success, and we won, championships and did all that. We had a very successful reign in Portland for the 4 years I was there. We were a pretty competitive team. Got to the finals, won a championship, drew very well, and got a number of players to the National Hockey League. I think between the Washington organization and I think it was probably the New Jersey organization, and they were the Albany River Rats at the time. I think both those two teams were powerhouses, and there was a good rivalry, but a lot of those players went up and played in the National Hockey League.
So Nashville, interesting city, great, great city, yep. But new to hockey. Did you feel like you were an ambassador to the Nashville city at all of the sport?
Absolutely. I got the call from David. David reached out. There was a change in Washington, actually, when David got let go in Washington, and then Nashville he got hired in Nashville, and I was met George McPhee, and he was happy with what I had done, but hadn't worked together before, but we met in Portland, and he said, I don't want anything to change, you're doing a good job, and all that, and obviously when there's a change and David gets hired, congratulations, and if you're looking for someone down the road, I'd love to come with you, because I had built a relationship with Dave, and I felt obviously a new team that'd be a great experience. And David had reached out, I guess, to the Caps and George if he could talk to me, and he did, and we sort of, I was going to come over, but I was surprised that I was getting the call to start up an expansion team, because all wisdom at that time, David, that you hear, David was getting advice from all these different general managers who had gone through the expansion process, and everything on that resume, and if you have to talk to David, but get the most experienced coach you can find. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be easy because of you're not going to have the roster that they have now in expansion, all these different things. that was checking the box off, not for me to be the coach. And then, but David went against conventional wisdom and said, you know, it's a new, I'm building it up from the ground. And I think he just said, I'm going to do it my way, and I'm going to bring in people that I trust, and we're going to have fun with this, and we're going to have a good organization and a good team, and we're going to build this thing, and I need people I can trust. So I think he had trust in me. And when he phoned me, I thought he was asking me to come over as the, maybe as assistant coach or as a, minor league coach or something like that. And then he said, you know, I'd like you to be the head guy. And I had that, moment, like, am I ready for this? And the one thing that I've always done when I have those kind of moments, I take a deep breath and go, okay, you're ready for it. Just dig in. And I sort of took that mentality. No matter what they throw at me, I'll be ready for it. Or if not, I'll find a way to get it done.
Is there almost less pressure to go to an expansion team where the expectations are almost none, and on top of that, a city that may not know hockey all that well?
It probably was perfect for me. I mean, I think when you make it to the NHL, you want to stay in the NHL. And one of the things when you make it to the NHL and you don't have those expectations, it was a little easier. You can have a little more fun with it. If you go into a situation where, you know, you're a cup contender or all that, it probably has a lot more pressure on you, because if you don't do a good job, you screwed it up, you may not get another one. And I think that was probably easier for me. I tried to surround myself. David surrounded me with a lot of good people that I could talk to. There was Rick Bonus and people like that that were in the pro scouting area and stuff like that. They were coaches, been in the league. They had a lot more experience than I did. And I was like, maybe these guys are going to be the next guy to take the job, because you get some insecurities because these guys have a lot of NHL games. I sort of looked at it the other way. I'm going to learn from these guys. I'm not going to be worried about my job security or anything like that. I just want to learn and see if we can make this thing work. It was a non-traditional market. David went with a non-traditional market, did it the non-traditional way. He went with a coach who had no experience and was going to have to build this. So it was one of the best experiences I ever had, because for me, I went to Hockey 101 GM school, if you will, or building an organization. David was so great at involving you in every aspect of the scouting, setting up an organization, setting up all the infrastructure of a team, what was taking place, naming, colors, everything, design, and really got to learn more probably in that year on running a whole business than ever before. And then what it allowed me is to see the big picture as well. Because if a lot of coaches come in and you can't see the big picture, you just see the day in front of you or the year in front of you and nothing more. But we were thinking differently. We were thinking, we're going to drive, a lot of these guys that we were taking an expansion draft, when we became a competitive team, probably wouldn't be a part of our hockey team. So they were sort of like rentals, so you couldn't get too attached to them. And seeing the bigger picture. So that probably was really vital for my success.
So you go from Nashville to Washington, where the expectations in Nashville are not a lot, and in Washington they're through the roof, right? The expectation is you need to win a cup. Did you feel that when you took that job?
At first, they didn't make the playoffs when I got there. So, but I knew a lot of the people in the organization. I knew the talent that they had, and they've been very good at drafting. They've got some really good people at work there that drafted very, very well. And I had a couple opportunities. There's three or four teams that reached out and wanted to talk to me when I left Nashville. And I started thinking about the family aspect. I have a special needs son who grew up with his siblings around him. And they were, you know, off to college, they could come, you know, they'd come home, they could drive. My daughter was in Nashville, so my oldest son was an hour and a half away, so they weren't too far. This was really the first time that there'd be some separation. And so I had a couple teams from the Western Conference reach out that were very serious, and I had a couple other teams on the East. And I just talked to my representative, said, I got to end up in Washington. I think that's the best spot I want to go to. If I can get there, let's get there. And so I met with the Washington people, and they're extremely good. And we made a deal. And I started that process of trying to bring the aspects that I felt when I coached against them that that would be very put them in a better place to win on a consistent basis and hopefully in the playoffs.
So you get to the run and you guys wind up winning the cup. At what point that season did you realize this will be us?
I sort of had a feeling a good portion of the year. It wasn't early. It wasn't early because if you remember the year before, we lost to Pittsburgh in Game 7 in the second round. And we were the President's Trophy team. They were, I think, second or third overall. And we're playing each other in the second round where we just couldn't get over that hump. And there was that mounting pressure. And there's a weight of expectation. But also in the fan base, you get into those big games in Washington, they've lost a lot of those big games. The fans sort of feed into that. There was a weight on the players.
Mm-hmm.
No question. You could write your name in it. I mean, there was a weight in the building, and it sucked a lot of energy out of that group. But we lost in seven games. And then the next year, we had to peel off a couple guys. Probably didn't have as deep a team, but sometimes you got to get kicked down on the ground pretty hard a few times, and they were willing to get up one more time, and I think that was the key. Once we were willing to get up, our training camp was not good. I didn't think we had a lot of energy at training camp, and our season was very pedestrian, if you will, early, and then I had a little a meeting in Colorado after a loss, and I hit a lot of the things that I was holding back, and I went to the edge a few times with what, you know, the elephants in the room. Everybody knew what they were, but no one was saying a word. I went after every elephant, and we got those out of the way. And I remember flying back, and I said to our staff, I said, I push them over, you know, push them to say, you know, it's not going to happen, or we brought them back, and we'll know next game. And we got back to, I think it was an afternoon game. I want to say it was against Minnesota, and our team played extremely well. It looked like it was going to happen, and that's sort of when I knew that now we have a chance. And I knew we were going to win the cup. If you remember that playoff year, we lost our first two home games against Columbus, and everybody the same old, you know, they never come back. Mm-hmm. Went down to never, you know, all those narratives that the Capitals have had over the years. And we came back in game 3-1 in double overtime, and I walked into the room, our coach's room, and I says, we're going to win the cup now. And I think the line was, you know, settle down, big boy, because we just won one game. And I said, no, we're going to win the cup.
So you're a hockey lifer. I mean, from the time you're a little boy, now you're the coach of the Capitals. Now you're going on this run through the postseason. When you get to that moment where you can watch the clock running down and know that it's on the verge of happening, what like, is that a moment that you'll never forget?
It is. I'm getting a little emotional now because you think about it. Every emotion that you have as a human being goes through you, every one of them. You think about all the people who helped you get it, all the people that were a part of it, your family, your parents, your extended family, your friends. It's every emotion, and it's total happiness, and Total Relief all in the same one, because you've climbed that mountain that you've looked at for me, you know, 50 some years. You're looking at that, and you wanting to climb it, and you finally do, and it's fantastic. It bonds a group forever, so I'm really proud of that group. And one of the first things that I when I was with the Islanders, as I said to this group, I said I can't tell you, because there's a couple guys who won a cup, a guy like Andrew Ladd and Johnny Boychuk, but I want to bring those emotions that you guys can experience, that who have not experienced it. It is a great experience to go through, and it's hard. It's not easy.
So you win the cup, and the emotion, as you've said, is through the roof. And then the cup is of any trophy in any sport, it's the most well-known, renowned trophy that there is. It gets handed to you, and you are now the head coach of the Stanley Cup champions. What must that be like?
Like I said, every emotion. You lift the cup up, and Ovi passed it to me, and it's. They say it weighs 32 pounds. It doesn't. It's light as a feather when you win it. But every emotion went through me. You're exhausted from the run. You're probably never more happy than you've probably been in that moment, and you've done it with a bunch of people, and you got to share it with a lot of people. Your family's there, your team's there, everybody, your friends, all that, and it's just hard to explain. You think about your best moment that you've ever had in your life, now times it by 10.
So you felt it. Does it make you desperate for it more, or is there a piece of you that feels satisfied that you've had it now?
I think both. You're satisfied because in one way that you've done it, you've accomplished it, but it makes you more hungry to get it again, because you start craving that, I want to do that again because it was so much fun. And you don't realize how much work it is, but it's not work because it becomes fun. It's a little bit of both. It's a relief that you've won it, because that's something you always want to do. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like an addiction now that you want another one. And so you'll do anything to get it.
So there you have it. That was my sit down with the head coach of the Islanders, Barry Trotz. And I have to be honest, and it pains me, because I'm a Rangers fan and everybody knows that. So you almost want to go in thinking that the opposition is just, they're bad guys and they're kind of evil. Barry could not have been a nicer guy. We sat around for a while after the interview and just chatted, caught up. My kids were with me. He was pleasant to them. Not even pleasant. He was really lovely to them. So I don't like the Islanders. I never will. But I like Barry Trotz, the person, and he just is a sensational guy. All right. So big thanks to him and the Islanders for allowing us to play that on the air this Saturday morning. Quick break. Come back. What's in store for the locals next this coming week? We'll find out. We'll do it next right here. It's Rothenberg with you. Crash the Net on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, hockey fans. Andy from Eric with this week's Crash the Net hockey trivia. The Islanders have had a number of hard-nosed players over the years. Do you know who is their career leader in penalty minutes? Stay tuned for the answer.
This is the Crash the Net podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to Crash the Net with Dave Rothenberg on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we've done a lot today. A big sit down with Barry Trotz, looked at what happened to the three locals this past week. We'll look what they have coming up this coming week in just a moment. But again, we are full service here on Crash the Net on 98.7 ESPN. So we want you to leave feeling positive, feeling optimistic. Your weekend is now underway, and maybe you can win a little something. So we have not one, no, two autographed New York Islanders pucks to give away, and we'll do it right now. It's so easy to enter. Here's what you do. Text CTN. You say, CTN, that's a brilliant little acronym. What is it? Crash the Net. So text CTN to 44202. Again, that's CTN to 44202. What we're going to do is select two winners at random and send them the signed puck. So it's all from your home for the hookup, 98.7 ESPN. All right. The three locals, what do their schedules look like this coming week? How do you plan your week around the team that you love? Well, here's how it plays out. Rangers back in action tonight. That's 6:30. Now, that's over on 10:50 against the Sabres. Remember, the Rangers have now won two in a row and had the win up in Buffalo on Thursday night in overtime, the goal from Zibanejad. So tonight, 6:30, 10:50 a.m. in Buffalo yet again. Rangers back home on Tuesday against the Pittsburgh Penguins. That is a 6:30 start right here on 98.7 ESPN. All the same except the day. Thursday, Pittsburgh, 6:30 on 98.7 ESPN. And then Friday, throw the records out the window. Rangers at the Islanders at the Coliseum, 6:30, and you can catch that game on 10:50 a.m. So quick recap, Rangers in Buffalo tonight, home to Pittsburgh Tuesday, home to Pittsburgh Thursday, and on the island against the Islanders on Friday. And like we've mentioned and will continue to, the Rangers need every point they can get. What do the Islanders have on tap this coming week? Tuesday, 6:30. Home against Washington, a game you can catch on 10:50 a.m. Of course, the Isles scored 8 against the Capitals on Thursday of this past week. Then on Thursday, it's the Philadelphia Flyers. They make a visit to the Coliseum, 6:30 start for that one. That's also on 10:50 a.m. And then the next night, so the Islanders will be playing, and so will the Rangers, back-to-back. Rangers Thursday against Pittsburgh, Friday the Islanders. Islanders Thursday against Philadelphia, Friday the Rangers. No travel at all for the Isles. They're home for that game on Friday night against the Rangers. 6:30 start over on 10:50. So Islanders home to the Caps, home to the Flyers, home to the Rangers. What do the Devils look like? Well, I'm glad you asked. Tomorrow in Washington, the nation's capital against the Capitals, 3 o'clock puck drop for that one. Then on Tuesday, the Devils back home. And this is the younger version of the Devils, like we mentioned earlier in the show. The Devils will be home against the Buffalo Sabres. That's Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Thursday, same opponent, same time, different location. Devils in Buffalo taking on the Sabres. And then Friday, Devils back at home against the Penguins. That is a 7 o'clock puck drop out in Jersey. So, again, for the Devils, it's tomorrow, Washington 3. Buffalo Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday home, Thursday on the road. Both games at 7. And then Friday home against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So that's what it looks like for the locals this coming week. All right. Thanks to go around to everybody. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you can win an Islanders giveaway and just text us to CTN to 44202 for a chance at that opportunity. Big thanks to our coordinating producer, Andy from Merrick, Anthony Pusick. I mean, we really couldn't do this without you. And even though he's off this week, we'll say a big thank you to Ray Dinahan as well. Joe Wiz is up next. I'm Dave Rothenberg. We'll be back with you at 9 o'clock this morning right here on 98.7. ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Crash the Net podcast with Dave Rothenberg. Listen live Saturdays at 7 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.